Welcome to Blightbringers, the Legion of Everblight focus podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tyrone, and my other host this week is Ryan. Welcome back to the show, buddy.
Oh, hi, I'm Ryan, and I'm the brother Tyrone never wanted. It's basically true. You can't deny it. God.
Okay, that one, you got me. That was a pretty good one.
I'm your better-looking brother from the South.
That's debatable.
No, it's not. I'm sexy, and you're Canadian. You're basically a Muppet.
Yikes. All right. Well, it's another Canadian we have this week. Special guest.
Oh, shit. Outnumbered.
Yeah, we got to fight you. Someone relatively new to the Blight, Avery Alder. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That's awesome to have you on. We kind of reached out to you because we knew that you're going to an event, your first one, I believe, and we were hoping to just kind of pick your brain about the new player experience in War Machine and playing Legion specifically.
Yeah, so welcome. First of all, are Canadians allowed to fight? I didn't think you guys were allowed to fight.
Have you watched hockey?
Yeah, but most of those players are like Swedish or Finnish.
That's partially true.
Yeah, it is. Second of all, Avery, tell us a little bit about you.
Okay, so first, in answer to the Canadians, are they allowed to fight question. I feel like, honestly, the last few months, a lot of the news cycle that's been hitting my feed, at least, has been about armed police marching in on Wet'suwet'en land defenders. And so in terms of like Canadian news, most of the stories I've been seeing are just like pictures of like lots of like tactically armed police storming like barricades put up by peaceful protesters. And so the idea of like Canadians are so polite, Canadians never fight, is like really funny to me right now.
Yeah.
Are you sure you didn't just borrow some US police for a day or two? They're basically a military of their own at this point.
No, it's the RCMP. They're equipped.
Oh, the Mounties. Yeah, no, you don't fuck with the Mounties.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely like my sense of like what are Canadians like right now is like armed snipers in the woods.
So this is like some World War II bullshit. I love it. Continue.
But about me, let's see. I'm really new to War Machine, and I've been playing for 3 months now. I've been to two tournaments. I'm living in an area with literally no meta anywhere within about 4 hours drive of me. So I'm like, great, I'll just learn the game by going to Vancouver and Seattle and competing in tournaments there.
It's not like there's a bunch of good players in those metas that will make that a problem.
No, yeah, it's a really natural transition into the hobby. So this is my first war game that I've been involved in, but I have been involved in a lot of tabletop role-playing games. I'm a designer, and I've been working in that field for about 13 years, as well as playing for about 15 or so. So I have a lot of analytical game design thinking going on in my brain already. So coming into the game, I felt like that has made it possible for me to pick up a lot of the mechanics and see the interplays and dynamics between mechanics probably faster than I would be if I was sitting down to that however many hundred page rule book with like nothing behind me in terms of past experience.
Yeah, that checks out. So what drew you to War Machine and Hordes over like any other game? What was the thing that you looked at and said, damn, I want to get in on this?
Well, so I almost got into War Machine and Hordes like 4 or 5 years ago. And at the time it was because my friend Andrew was into the game and was like, I have this small amount of Crix models. I'm not going to use them. And we, you know, played one game and I took them and bought more models and started painting them up. And then was like, actually, I'm just not in a place in my life right now where I could realistically invest the time and energy and money into doing this. And so I sold those models off and then didn't touch the game again for about, I guess, 4 years. But with Hordes specifically, the way that just like the way that the Fury mechanic works with that kind of give and take between beasts and warlock has just like always stuck out in my mind as a really compelling mechanic and something really compelling to like build a game around. And so when I was doing like role-playing game consulting with various companies, I'd be like, oh, also, I want you to go check out this game, Hordes, and like look at this mechanic, because this kind of, this really dynamic give and take at the center of the game is something that maybe we could be learning from as well. And so it was kind of always in the back of my mind. And I guess just over the past year, I've been really wanting to like have a hobby, do something that's like for myself, that is definitely not work, that I'm not trying to turn a side gig out of. And so I was drawn back into the game.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's super cool. So what drew you to Legion over, say, Circle or Scorn or Trollbloods or even Minions, which still aren't a real faction?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I was more interested in Hordes factions compared to War Machine factions just generally. The fact that there's, I don't know, there are beasts, the fury mechanic, like I said, is really compelling. And so Scorn wasn't interesting to me. I thought a lot about getting into Trollbloods, into Northkin especially. But what drew me to Legion was Hellmouths, Proteus, and the idea of a playstyle that's really has the potential to move fast, hit hard, glass cannon kind of factions and approaches, I think really work well with my personality type because I'm quite impulsive and I feel like taking risks in a game feels really low stakes to me. Like I'm really happy to do that. And so like a faction where I have to like grind it out and crunch the numbers and always be like, I'm going to move forward half an inch. I don't know. It just wasn't appealing to me playstyle wise. And yeah, Legion's high risk, high reward style, I feel like is a match for how I naturally want to play games. So yeah, that plus tentacles.
Can't say no to the tentacles.
I mean, I feel like that says something about your personality and possibly your private life. Never mind. Moving on.
Do not, Ryan.
Yep, I didn't go there. I didn't do it. Not going to make the tentacle joke. Too easy.
Oh my God.
Don't need that in my life. Marissa is currently glaring at me like I'm crazy.
That's so appropriate.
Yeah, don't encourage her to glare at me like I'm crazy. She does that enough without your encouragement.
I'll message her later.
Talking about me in your podcast.
But we like you. I like you.
All right, let's get back on topic.
So, go ahead.
So Legion, like you're right, it is pretty kind of like a faction that has the tools to just reach out and touch your opponent really quickly and really powerfully. And I know, I think you brought an Abbey 2 list to your event. So why don't we talk about your list and then we'll talk about the event.
Sure, yeah. It was Abbey 1.
Oh, Abbey 1.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I really like her. So I brought two lists. One was Absalonia 1 in Primal Terrors. She brought, is this right? Yeah. She brought a Blightbringer, a Carnivian, Golab in Proteus, and a Muck in there. So that was her battle group. Two Forsaken, a min unit of Warmongers with Goreg, and then two Hellmouths. And so Goreg and the two Hellmouths were the requisitions. Normally, I know Blightbringer is thought of as an infantry support, but I brought it knowing that the concealment bonus could work out really well in terms of making the Carnivian and Proteus just like slightly harder to hit, less likely to die to, you know, like Rat 5, Rat 6. Things running around. And so, yeah, I really like that list. Playing it, I mean, it's really fun to have a gargantuan on the table and be like, you have to one punch this. Otherwise, you've done nothing. Like, you have to overcommit so many resources to taking out any of these models.
Yeah, because feet turn.
Yeah, because feet turn.
So good.
And definitely in one of the games, like there was a Carnivian left on two boxes and I got to heal it up to full. And then in another game, there was a Golab. Golab was down to like, I think three boxes and got to heal up to full. Ooh. And so it feels good, you know?
Yeah. Feels real nice.
It is the best feeling in the world to look at your opponent's face and they're like, oh, you can't do anything next turn. It's just like, here's the thing. Yes, I can.
Yeah.
You are very wrong about that.
And then the other list was Fianna in Ravens. Her battle group was Golab, Nerf, Seraph, Rake, and two free Harriers. And then she had a free Sorceress and Hellion, a free Kralix, a Strider Deathstalker, two Forsaken, a Grotesque Assassin with a max unit of Raiders, and then a max unit of Raptors and a single Hellmouth. And so the build of this list, I was trying to go for something that could play the wider scenarios. The Rake, Raiders, and Grotesque can be like a stealth block that swings around one of the sides. And there's a lot of Swift Hunter, Reposition, and other things like that to try and kind of move forward just enough to be baiting people. And the idea is to try and like force people to kind of overcommit somewhere and then be able to swing at them from the flanks.
Yeah, that checks out.
That makes a lot of sense.
Which didn't really go that way in either of the games that I played it with. The first game I played with the Fianna 2 list, it was in the morning. I hadn't really woken up yet. And it was against Flame in the Darkness, which I'd played once before, but was still kind of wrapping my head around, just because it feels like that's a list with a lot of breadth.
Yeah, there's a lot of possibilities in that theme.
And I hadn't played with Harriers before for the Mark target. I hadn't played with a Seraph, and I was just getting a lot of like order of activation things wrong, forgetting to do Seraph's Apparition, forgetting like the point of the Harrier was to like just like throw it at the opponents and not worry about the fact that it was going to get killed. And so that first game, I lost. But then the second game, I won in a Legion Mirror match against Lilith 3 and took her out on Assassination.
Nice.
Was this, well, first of all, what event did you go to? Because I don't think we've actually called it out by name yet.
That's fair.
Oh, yeah. This was Seattle Open. I was really curious whether it was going to get canceled last minute because of COVID-19, but it didn't. So I was just like, had a pocket stuffed full of Kleenex and a pocket stuffed full of hand sanitizer and like prayed for the best. Seattle Open. And then I'd been to one event previously, which was Thornwood Throwdown in Bellingham.
I feel like I should know where that is, but I don't offhand.
It's above Seattle and below Vancouver. So it's a smaller city, but it brought up a lot of people from the Seattle meta and a lot of people down from the Vancouver meta. So it felt like
kind of a good mix.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right on. So the second game, were you playing Fianna as well?
Yeah. So that second game was Fianna versus Lilith 2. Lilith 3, the huge base one. And
sorry.
She was left on with zero fury when she had already had a couple points put into her. And it just like, it all lined up perfectly that I was like, okay, if the Seraph can flare and then Kralix can weaken and both of those shots get in, then she's down to like def 10 and has no stealth. And then the Deathstalker can put one point into her. And then I can just barely get the Rake to Bounding Leap. And so a furied Rake ended up taking her out, and it was like down to like the final die roll of like all of my beasts are maxed on fury. This Rake has three dice. If I hit a 12 or higher, she's dead. And if not, like I've got nothing to transfer to and I'm toast next turn.
Yeah, that sounds like a Legion Assassination run.
Yep, checks out.
I thought about the odds and I'm like, I don't remember what it was, but maybe something like a 40% assassination run. But like looking at the board state, like I feeded and then she feeded and put Golab and the Nerf stationary and then like just ate them alive.
Yep.
So I was like looking at the board, like I have a 40% assassination run, which isn't great, but I think I have like a 10% chance of winning any other way. So yeah, I came down to a single die roll and I rolled high.
Sweet.
It's always good to rely on spikes. That never goes badly for anybody ever.
Yeah. I mean, that's my strategy. Just rely on spike dice.
Yeah. I did that at the OTC last weekend. In my final game, I looked at my opponent, and he was playing Old Witch 3. And I was like, okay, I can't shoot these stupid, horse people, Naysayers. And like he has a bunch of recursive units, and the Raptors just can't shoot because of Old Witch. And I'm like, well, maximum greed. As I feed Charge Golab in, see what happens. It didn't work.
By the way, how did OTC go for you? You should probably have done this in like a better order, but
it's fine. we'll we'll talk about it maybe another time, but it didn't go great for me. I went 1-3 with the forfeit as well. So 2-3 technically, but it was a lot of fun. Like, I went there just to be with friends and hang out with people. So
you have friends?
Turns out.
Fuck. Do they know about this or?
No, I'm just like a parasite. It's like,
yeah, that checks out. Yeah. I would believe that.
But the OGC was sweet. Like, that event's always pretty good. And I might actually care more about it next year and want to go. We'll see. I don't know.
Assuming it happens next year, we might all be dead by then.
That's true. All right. Back to the Seattle Open and Avery's event.
Yep. We get distracted easily. It's a thing that happens. Anywho, so Seattle Open, you played how many games there?
So 3 in the actual tournament, and then after that it cut to the top 4, and so then I had one more game that was, like, just for fun. And so in the actual tournament, I lost to Flame in the Darkness, won to a Legion mirror match, lost to Warriors of the Old Faith.
Ouch. Both newer themes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Warriors of the Old Faith, I don't really know how to respond to it. Flame in the Darkness, I actually feel like Legion is well positioned into. Like, just looking at it, there's a lot of single wound living infantry. And the Fianna list, like, just has a lot. Like, it has a Deathstalker and it has the Raptors and it's got Kralix. So there's just lots of poison.
Yep, you can absolutely chew through that.
Yeah. Yeah, there's ways to take stealth away from models. And so it just feels like, other than dealing with the blockader, Legion's just, like, pretty, yeah, well-positioned to handle that one. But Warriors of the Old Faith, that's the name of it, right? The cavalry list?
Yep.
Yeah, that one I'm not really sure how to respond to. I think I did well in that game. Like, I managed to take out multiple Dragoons and every Jack. And I lost with a botched assassination run that just left me overexposed. But, like, in terms of list building for it, I don't really know what to do.
Yeah, that's the weird one. I've admittedly only played into it once, maybe twice, and that was with Vlad 3, where he just went first and went, yeah, I'm going to put Adjudicator on the 21-inch line, top of 1. Your turn. I was like, cool. So I can't leave my deployment zone without getting Adjudicator to the face. This is awesome. Why is everything so fast?
Yeah.
What is this?
I played against it at the OTC, actually, and that was the only game I... did I win that game?
I don't know. Did you win that game?
No, I didn't win that game. But it was a very good game.
Well, that's disappointing.
Yeah. So I had the same thing happen. My opponent was running Judicator with Ulans and a couple... It was Vlad 3 as well. And a couple of Archons. And what I ended up doing there was I was playing Lilith 2 into it, which was kind of awkward.
But that doesn't sound great.
It wasn't, but key things that I forgot. Strider Scouts have Hunter.
Yep.
So they shoot Archons real good in trenches.
Yep, ignoring concealment and cover is pretty decent.
Yeah. And then the other thing is that I ended up having to tie up the Judicator with a Carnivian just so he couldn't get on me. And I put a Sorceress and Hellion behind it with the 8-inch no shooting aura. So he basically couldn't spray my scouts down, which was awesome. So what he ended up doing is he comes into my Carnivian to punch the crap out of it, and I have spiny growth up. So, like, I basically gave away this Carnivian for, like, 2 points of damage on the Judicator. But Golab was in position to charge it the next turn. So Golab did all but 9 boxes to the thing, so I felt pretty good about that, but it was still a little awkward that it didn't die. And then Golab got smooshed. But then Hero Forsaken takes the Fury from Golab the next turn, or, well, it took the Fury from Golab the previous turn, and charged that Judicator and just scrapped it. I was like, yes! Go Forsaken! It's not a good plan, but it was a plan, and I executed it.
I have so many questions about how games go in your magical Christmas land where the shit somehow works.
I mean, you're only dice off 7.
And you just only!
He's got to roll a 12. It's fine. Twice in a row.
Oh my god. You know, I don't know how you do these things.
Have your opponent forget that the hermit should probably negate the second die roll. It's fine.
So just playing up bad opponents. Got
no,
it. Okay.
He was a good opponent. You'd be nice. But yeah, that was a fun experience. I don't know if I'd play Lilith 2 into it again, but
I don't know that I'd play Lilith 2 into it at all.
Yeah,
whoever convinced you to play Lilith 2 is a bad person.
It was Lucas. You can rant at him later in the episode.
Damn it, Lucas!
Anyway, so has covered all the games for you every year, or do you have one more?
One more.
Those are the three that were actually in the official tournament. And then the fourth one that was just for fun was against Crucible Guard. And what did I play? I played Absalonia 1. And I won that one on clock. I feel like a big part of that was just Crucible Guard has a lot of AoEs and a lot of sprays. So you're wasting a lot of time rolling deviations and wasting a lot of time rolling damage on models you don't actually care about taking out. And so even though I was like kind of like hesitating and taking a lot of time to make some of those decisions, they ran themselves into the ground. And I feel like Absalonia 1 is actually like aiming to win on clock is like I think a viable strategy for her in general as well. Cause like what she does well is says, okay, you've been hitting all these things, let's just reset and you can keep on hitting them. So yep. it's sucking the opponent's clock away.
It sure does.
And so, the Blightbringer got taken out in a single turn. So I didn't get to be like, and I'll just erase 50 damage here. but Golab, there was a lot of resources sunk into Golab, and Golab was left on three boxes. There's a lot of board space that I was just like getting crushed on. Like there's two Rayless Interceptors on one side of the board and I deployed first. So I didn't have any chance to like really respond to them. I didn't realize they repo.
Yep.
And so, I mean, I've been doing a lot of learning about how the models work, just like by being crushed by them.
Yeah, that's how you learn mostly, because like you can't read all 1,200 cards, whatever it is now.
Yep. Yeah, no. But the fact that like there are so many huge base models that reposition, like I think Throne repositions, Siege Animatrix repositions, these Realist Interceptors reposition, and none of them seem like looking at the model, I'm like, I don't think you should reposition.
Yeah, Throne does not.
Oh, it doesn't?
No.
Hmm.
Nope.
It flies.
You can put refuge on it.
It does fly, and you can put refuge on it, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Which is hilarious.
It is weird to see huge bases kind of, you know, just kind of walk around the table, free to go wherever they want.
Just mad, like the turtle. I don't know why the hell that thing is speed 9.
Yeah, we need to get that thing nerfed.
Yeah, that don't to this day understand that at all. Just speed 9 auto knockdown because fuck you. That's why.
That is.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Raptors are speed 9, and they're clearly like light cavalry that are built to do nothing but run fast.
Yeah. Sure, and yet here's a giant turtle with guns on its back and carrying dudes, and it's just like, nah, man, speed 9. I'm as fast as these friggin'...
I mean, to be fair, turtles are notoriously fast.
Are they? What turtles are you watching?
Oh, man.
Is this like a Canadian turtle thing?
Yeah, it's backwards
Canadian
up here.
Turtles are very fast.
The rabbits are really slow. You can just catch them.
I guess so. Fuck. Okay, so Avery, you said you haven't been playing for long, and this was your second event. We kind of went over a little bit what drew you into, you know, the game and the faction. So, out of, you know, from a new player perspective, you know, me and Tyrone have both been playing for a while. According to some people, we're both jaded, cynical assholes, as well as many people who have been playing for a while. But you have fresh eyes, and you're definitely not jaded or cynical. Probably, I assume. So, you know, what do you think of the faction as a whole? What are your thoughts from kind of learning? What are the things that you're looking at and going, man, this is, you know, like the Fury mechanic. It's something that's very dynamic. It's kind of defining. It's just something you really enjoy or have found to be particularly strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, coming into the faction, fast, mobile beasts are really exciting to me. Like the Nerf having sprint, Golub having lightning strike, like these kind of like hit and run type tactics are really exciting. Something that I'm noticing is that, like, I think against Flame in the Darkness, and a few of the other lists as well that I've played against, I'm like, oh, you actually out-threat me. Like, I think Legion is designed to be to have really long threat ranges, yep. But they haven't had enough updates. So, like, just looking at newer models, it's like, oh, you can just threat 14 or, like, threat 18 or some ridiculous number. And so, like, you are faster than my flying dragons that, like, speed is supposed to be their whole thing. So coming in and playing into some stuff, it's very like, oh, I see this, like, this faction's identity and what it's supposed to do. And there are some places where it's just like, it's under delivering on its promises. And, like, interestingly, I think, like, since the Primal Terrors, I think it's the last CID that has happened for Legion, right?
That's right.
Yep.
So, like, a lot of Legion's, like, really great stuff, Golub aside, is actually, like, really tough armor skew related stuff. Like, Helmos with a Blightbringer and stuff like that, like, are, like, actually some of the Legion's stronger models. So I think there's, like, a weird identity versus reality on the table tension that I'm noticing coming in, and I'm glad that there's a CID coming up and a dynamic update, and I imagine that's part of, like, either making fast beasts cheaper or fast beasts actually able to out-threat things. Like, I imagine that's where they're going, but...
I mean, with the help of... We already know a little bit about, like, a Mechana Shredder. That'll help. Mind you, it's only against Constructs, but still, it's pseudo-boundless charge on a lesser. That's pretty decent, and that should help with some of the speed issues.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be weird that every Legion list is going to have two wind-up toys in it now.
But they're so good, and they're so adorable.
They're really cute.
I want a plushie version. PP, plushie one. Let's do this.
Oh, they have no collectibles anymore to sell. You know that.
What? Since when?
Since they sent them all out in their mystery boxes.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
It's true.
But yeah, I don't know. I've been mostly building lists around the models that I'm, like, most excited about. And then, like, trying to be like, okay, how do I get this to a semi-competitive level? But, like, I really love the Grotesque Raiders, like, the models. And so I'm, like, really committed to putting them into every Ravens list that I build.
Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah, they're just really cool looking. The Grotesque Assassin especially is super cool looking.
I mean, if only the wings didn't have the overhang. That is my one complaint with them. I have two units, and I hate the wings.
Yeah, they're a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah, storing these models, trying to unpack them, like, in turn one, it's... I feel like my deployment and my turn one take an extra 2 minutes each because there are so many wings to try and manage.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yep, Legion problems.
But, no, I don't know. I really love a lot of the changes to Ravens of War. I came in, like, I started reading the rules and, like, really trying to, like, absorb everything about the game before I actually bought models or started playing. And so I started reading everything, like, 3 weeks before Oblivion came in and, like, the theme changes came in. And so I was like, oh, I love the idea of Ravens of War. I'm really excited about this theme. And also it seems not good. and then, like, immediately after I, like, came to that evaluation, they're like, and we changed it. Now it's, like, actually good, which was really exciting. But yeah, I don't know. I started reading everything then. I started playing in basically at the turn of the new year. And I don't know. Golab's good.
He's very good.
Turns out. So what model are you, as a newer player, most excited for? What are you looking at and going, damn, that is what I want?
In terms of models, I feel like I'm really excited about the Nerf, really excited about Grotesques, really excited about Raptors. In terms of actual play style. I feel like Nerf and Seraph and Golab is like my battle group for one of my lists, and I'm really excited to play with that crew.
Just anything with wings that's jumping all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like the Slipstream and Sprint combination seems really fun. I feel like there's less hitting power, but if I'm able to do a lot more like shenanigans, then I don't mind that. I don't mind being pillow fisted if it means that like I can just like be playing hijinks and I can be like, okay, I take this one guy, I dodge behind this boulder. It's a fun dynamic, I think, on the table. It's more fun than being like, I move my brick up 4 inches, nothing can touch them. Next turn, I move them up 4 inches and nothing can touch them.
Yeah, it's effective. That's the thing, right? Like, you play a Kallus 1, you're just like, I move all my stuff up and I feat, and I pass the turn, and I say good luck to you, because I hope you have enough attacks. It's like, it's not exactly an interesting game. It's not interactive, really. And it's, I don't think it's fun necessarily, but it's effective. And that's what a lot of people look for first, right? There's
a lot of scrubs.
I don't know about that. There's a definite subset of the community that will go, all right, what's our most powerful list? And they'll see stuff like that. And they'll be like, all right, I'm playing this. And that's not exclusive to Legion, right? Like, there are people who can faction hop pretty regularly. Just like, all right, what's the flavor of the week, right?
Yep. Tom Guan immediately comes to mind on that one. I'm not calling him out for it because he's just a very good player, but I swear every time I see like a report of him anywhere, it's just like, oh yeah, now I'm playing Kador. And then like, a week later, he's like, all right, I brought Grimkin to this. It's like, wait, what? Weren't you just, oh, okay, I guess, sure.
Okay, so how do people do that logistically? Do they just sink like $600 into a new army every 6 months? Are they constantly like trading and swapping stuff? Do they have a like trade library with their friends? Like, so, how do
I assume a lot of it is just borrowing. Like, once you've been playing for a while, you probably own, you know, 2 or 3 full factions. And if you have friends that have been playing for a while, they probably do about the same. So then you get into the areas of like, hey, I really want to take faction X to this event. You're not using them, right? Cool. Can I borrow them? Awesome. And then they go and win that event. And then a week later, give them back and go to another friend and do the same thing.
Yeah. There are some people who literally just own everything. Like, I'm looking at McWaters, I'm looking at Marc-Andre, like, or they'll just, yeah, or there are some cases where people will just be like, all right, this faction's really good right now. They go out and buy the 2 lists they want to play, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember when I went up and was playing against Becca for Arcane Assist. Originally, when I showed up, she's like, yeah, I'm going to play Infernals today. But I don't remember who was painting them for. They didn't like give her everything. So she's like, well, I've got Circle here. I've got Ret here. I've got Mercenaries and something else. You know, I'm just going to find something to play. And it's just like, you just carry 4 factions around with you? And she's like, well, some of them are the stores and, you know, they're things that I've bought and other people have bought, and yeah, they just kind of live here. It's like, must be nice. All right. So I'm going to get a grab bag of let's see what happens. Cool. It's weird. That's the gist of it. It's just weird. So anyway,
I feel like preparing for a game, I need to like I'm bringing 2 lists and already that feels like a lot to be trying to hold in my brain. Maybe it just becomes automatic, but I like playing against other people. It doesn't seem like it's automatic for them. It doesn't seem like they have rules recall of just like every model in the game or anything like that. And so the idea of like being able to be like, oh yeah, I can just remember like 9 lists worth of stuff.
I think a lot of it honestly comes down to like repetition. So like the individual models don't necessarily, not that they don't matter, but they kind of don't matter if your positioning is right. And if like your core fundamentals of the game and the rules are all right, then you can kind of just interchange the models as long as you have an idea of what they do. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, a heavy infantry unit is going to be a heavy infantry unit, regardless of faction. The stats might be a little different and the rules might be a little different, but the general purpose is going to be the same. And I think if you break it down that way, it makes it a little bit easier and kind of makes more sense. But I don't remember who I was listening to a long time ago now when I first started playing. It might have actually been Becca, who said that War Machine is actually a very easy game to learn. There's, you know, two steps. First, you have to learn your rules, and then you have to learn everybody else's. And right now, like, almost everybody's on step one of that, and it's only when you get to that, like, higher level of play that you get to step two, where it's, okay, now I know all of my own rules, and I know every single thing in my army at top of my head. Now I just need to learn everybody else's. And that's challenging, to say the least.
Yeah, it's a boatload of work, and I'm happy just knowing my own stuff and then forgetting half of the things constantly.
I was going to say, you don't even know your own stuff. You're like halfway through step one.
I know, it's bad. Like, I know my stats.
Do you? You forget about stuff all the time. Wasn't it like a week ago you were like, oh yeah, I played this game and definitely forgot to deploy two Sorks.
That is the first thing
you do is deploy stuff. Yeah, and you forgot to do it.
I think I did that for both my games.
Oh my god.
I'm good at this game, right? No? No, like...
You are something.
What I'm saying, though, is like, I know my model's stats, I just don't necessarily remember everything on their card, right? Like,
or to even put them on the table.
Well, I didn't need them.
Self-handicap.
Yeah. Inadvertent.
I'm so good at this game, I could play 12 points down. Let's do this.
Okay, easy now. Let's see here. So I guess obviously you're going to continue playing Legion. Are you going to stick with Abbey 1 and Fauna, or are you going to kind of search out new lists to try?
So part of the reason that I am doing Abbey 1 and Fauna is that they're champions casters. And I know I want to do Ravens. And so I'm playing those two casters and kind of like making one of them a Ravens list, no matter what I'm like showing up to, even if it's like for Thornwood Throwdown in Seattle Open, I showed up with champions casters for Masters events, because part of my, like, I don't know, I feel like my real goal is to show up to events and lose in interesting ways and learn about learn more about the game through every loss. But that's not actually like a very good motivating goal. So my motivating goal is to go to last chance qualifiers for the Iron Gauntlet and compete in champions.
Super cool. Just on a side note, is Ravens in champions right now? I thought it was Children and Oracles, but I could be wrong.
No, it's Ravens and Oracles.
Oh, all right. So I'm very wrong then.
I mean, unless I've been cheating, let me look that up right now.
Yeah, that happens.
That sounds right, though.
No, Ravens of War, Oracles of Annihilation.
Okay, I might be thinking of last season.
Yeah, so I've been doing Fiona and Ravens specifically because I want to do last chance qualifiers in Champions, and I don't have any of the stuff for Oracles of Annihilation. I don't have Thrones. I don't have any real minion stuff to lean on, other than a unit of Valkyries. So I feel like any list I bring is probably not a list I'm going to play very much, but Absalonia Terror of Everblight is in the ADR. And so I'm bringing a really battle group heavy Oracles list for her. Like, I think it's like 86 points in her battle group.
Okay. So now you're talking my language, because I played like several hundred games with an Abbey 1 list in Oracles with very few minions. If you ever want advice or just to bounce ideas around, reach out and message me, because I am happy to talk about that shit forever.
I mean, do you want to talk about that right now?
I don't know if we have time right now. Tyrone is... Okay. It's like
go for
a,
it.
Oh, all right. So what I was doing, and this is my starting point with her, was Abbey 1 with Proteus, two Carnivians, a Seraph. There was an Angel in there? Yeah, there was an Angel.
There was an Angel.
Yep. Sorceress for free, two Forsaken for free. I think that sounds right. And then Valkyries and Ice Witches. And you have a ridiculous threat range. Carnivians under Spiny Growth and Feet are ridiculous to remove.
Mm-hmm.
because you're, you know, healing back to full, they're doing D3 damage every time they get hit, and then they're healing three, you know, D3 damage back. It works super well into Gunline, so like Retribution, which Fianna sometimes has an issue with, Sloane, which Fianna has an issue with because she just shoots her off the table. You can play into those matchups and play this weird hit and run game with refuging Angelius's and Proteus threatening 15 inches all game and just going, hey, if your caster isn't safe, I'm just going to get to them between flight and feet and eat them. I don't care. And it is just super fun. I recommend that list. You should try it.
Okay, yeah. The one that I've got loaded up on War Room right now, like it has a lot of the same parts. It's Archangel, Proteus, Carnivian, Seraph, Free Sorceress, Free Sorceress, Free Forsaken, another Forsaken, a Shepherd, Valkyries, and Ice Witches.
Okay.
So it sounds like you would drop the Archangel, throw in another Carnivian and an Angelius.
Yeah. My biggest problem with the Archangel and having run it not really recently, but recently enough, was things like Void Archons exist, and that just makes it super sad when they can run an 8-point solo up and just go, cool, I've negated the feat on this 35-point thing that you were hoping to keep alive, and yeah, now it's dead. It's like, oh, okay, cool. And it's a lot worse of a trade if they can do that to maybe a Carnivian.
Right. I mean, that's still a ridiculous trade. The Archons all seem quite powerful, especially Void.
Yeah, they're all really good, and the Void Archon's bullshit. I hate that thing with a vitriol that I cannot adequately express in words. Yeah, that's a good way to say it.
Cool. Well, it sounds like I'm in the right direction. The Valkyries and Ice Witches, the Sorceresses and Forsaken. We've got some of the same battle group.
Yep. Give it a try. Let me know how it goes for you. And if you, like I said, if you ever just want help dissecting a game or just going through stuff, like, I love me some Abby One. I think I've played her over 300 games. Like, I am happy to talk about her all day long. I'm all in on that.
Yeah, I feel like against Void Archons, like every time I've thought about playing Abby into anything, like my first questions are just like, what do you have in terms of Grievous Wounds and what do you have in terms of Upkeep Denial? And like, it is the answers to those two questions that determine whether I drop her or not, usually.
Yeah, that makes sense. Although Fianna has a bunch of upkeeps too.
Yeah.
Thinking about that, they're both fairly upkeep heavy. Ugh, that does not feel good in me. Just got that little jolt of like, oh, that doesn't feel good thinking about it.
Mm. Yeah. All right. So quickly, we've asked this over the last couple of guests, but I kind of actually want to get your thoughts. For the Blade Archon, what would you like to see it do?
Yeah, I shared this in one of the Discords, but hearing the fluff that it is like specifically Everblight being like, fuck these Archons, why do these other gods think that they get special angels? I'm basically a god, I should get my own angels. Like that combined with just like the fact that Archons have had a hugely, it seems like to me, I just got here, but it seems like Archons have had a huge meta warping effect. Like they are extremely powerful 8-point models. It seems like people basically just take the max field allowance of every single Archon they're allowed to. So what I'm really hoping for is that the Blade Archon has Vendetta Archons. That's my one thought about it. I think like it will have been about a year since the Archons dropped when the Blade Archon drops. And I think it should just be like an Archon hate model.
That'd be interesting.
I think it would do it. Like it wouldn't change how powerful Archons are generally, but it would be this like one, like this one thing to make people hesitate to like, just be like two Thamorite, two Morrowind, like as a default. Just like knowing that there was a model out there in a recently buffed faction that could potentially ruin their day. So that's my one thought.
So all I can think of is Everblight being Crocodile Dundee and just going, that's not an Archon. This is an Archon. I feel like that would be hilarious and I want that in the fluff now.
That's fabulous. All right. I think that'll call that an episode. Thank you, Avery, for coming on. It's been super great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Do you have any events coming up you want to talk about?
I don't think so. I'm going to be going down to Vancouver, and as long as there aren't new updates for COVID-19, I'm going to be playing some games, but they're just kind of like meet up on a Sunday, play games. I think the next event I'm going to do is probably Iron Gauntlet, and so a lock and load, and the last chance qualifiers. And so, yeah, I don't know. I've played a total of 12 games ever now. I'll probably be going into that having played 14, maybe 15.
You'll be ready to take it down.
that's like a huge number of games, right? Like people don't play War Machine very often, right?
No, it's super casual. You know, you get like one in a week, maybe. You'll be prepared. It'll be fine, I'm sure. Well, that sounds awesome, though. At the very least, I'm sure you'll have a great experience. Like the people who go to Lock and Load are, like, my understanding, it's some of the just nicest people in wargaming. Like everyone's super friendly.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of the same people I saw at Thornwood Throwdown and Seattle Open, just in terms of like it's in the same area. And so I'm excited to go there, lose some games, do the caster draft madness on Sunday.
Sweet. I want to do that. I still haven't done that. That caster draft is exactly my kind of shit.
I saw that at the Sioux, not this past year. I think it was the year before. And I was so planning on doing it. And then alcohol happened. And
I think 2 years ago, they had the cards before they were actually released, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that was cool.
Super dope.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Like Avery, I haven't gone there. I don't know if I'll ever make it out to Lock and Load, but it's exciting to hear that someone who's like hyped on Legion is willing to go and give it the best shot. Like that's great.
You got to get your passport first.
I have one. I have it.
You do?
I know. I'm allowed into the States now.
Well, you're allowed to go to the border.
Okay.
I don't know if they'd actually let you across.
Fair enough. I don't know. I guess we'll find out one day.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's see. Okay, so you said you want to do this at the start of the show, but apparently you want to rant about some nonsense.
I do. So several different things. Let's make this as quick as possible, though, because some people have shit to do, like sleep.
Yeah.
But here's the important thing. I don't have any events coming up recently, and the simple reason for that is this fucking COVID-19?
Yeah.
Coronavirus, as it's been all over the news and everything else. And I keep hearing a lot of people being stupid. And by that, I mean saying things like, only people who are vulnerable are probably going to die and I'll be fine. Except that's still a shitty way to look at it. Because those are still people. Like, my mother had cancer not too long ago. She is fucking vulnerable to shit like this. I have friends and family who are vulnerable to this, and I am not the only one. A lot of people do. So, don't be a jackass, wash your hands, and don't do anything stupid. This shouldn't be difficult or a thing that needs to be said, and yet here the fuck I am.
I feel like especially for War Machine tournaments, like, you kind of have to stand at a table for 2 hours. So find hand sanitizer and bring it, and don't shake people's hands before and after a game. I know that's good etiquette, but like figure out like your friendly wave maneuver instead.
Fist bump.
Do the Japanese style. Bow. Bow respectfully at each other for a moment.
I like it. So fist bumps are an option. Hand sanitizer, clean up between rounds, maybe, you know.
Wash your hands. Don't be a jackass.
Yeah.
If you're sick, stay the fuck home.
Practice good hygiene. That's fair, Ryan.
On that note, Adepticon was canceled today for the same reason. So, kind of sucks. That means no ATC as far as I know. I don't believe that's going to get rescheduled, but
they released a statement. They're going to look at it.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll come up with something, but so anybody who's going to that kind of sucks. It's a rather large event, but you know, safety comes first. So, you know, be safe. Don't do anything stupid.
Would you say that's a sad trombone?
Yeah, that's definitely a wah wah moment.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Fucking War Machine General.
Okay, so quickly, I got no events coming up, but Lifebringers is selling merchandise. We've had a few requests in the past. You're selling patches.
And pins.
Yeah, so I got patches made. I got pins made. The patches aren't here yet, but they should be within a week, hopefully. Pins are in my hands, and they're amazing. They look super dope. I put one on my bag already, and it fits right in.
Yeah,
Are open for those. There's a link to the form on the Blightbringers page. Just fill it out. Tell us how many you want of the pins, how many you want of the patches, and where you're located. And then send the money to where it says on that form. And as soon as I get everything together, I will be sending it all out to you. And you can show it off to all your friends and be like, look at me, I got sweet merch.
Yeah, I think the Australians just bought a bunch.
Yeah, they just did a group order. They got 12 of each. I'm like, oh my god, it's amazing.
Australia has that many people? I thought at this point it was basically down to wallabies and koalas.
I mean, like 12 people that are excited about Legion. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's true. So, yeah, this was just a thing you put together instead of me and Cutter having anything to do with it. So, you know, thank you for that.
Yeah,
and no, anyone who at any point was like, yeah, I would buy merch if you bought it, understand that now it is bought. So now, step the fuck up.
Yeah, so I'll be sending you guys, Cutter and Ryan, I'll be sending you guys a copy of the pin and the patch.
And I'll be sending you money.
No, that's not necessary.
You literally put an order form with your PayPal. You cannot stop me.
All right, fair enough.
Like, fuck, what are you going to do, send it back?
No, that's too much
work. I would be pretty Canadian.
I'm just gonna turn it into Swordilage and give it to you at the zoo.
I mean, I'm not seeing the downside to this for me at all.
All right. I think that'll do for this episode. So, as always, you can join us on the Discord. A link to that will be in the show notes below, as well as the lists for Avery's tournament and Abby One list that Ryan mentioned. Again, I'm sure I've posted it like 20 times at this point. But
I've talked about that list so much. I love that list.
It's a good list.
It's super good.
Avery, thank you again for coming on. I'm sure we'll get you on again at some point. Maybe we'll get you to talk about Lock and Load.
Sweet, yeah. Yeah, also having actually played some games.
Yeah, you can come back having played some games, harassed Hungerford a little bit.
Yeah, give us all the spoilers about the Blade Arc on. I'm sure you just put some alcohol into him, he'll spill.
I heard it was P.F. Chang's.
Oh, P.F. Chang's, there you go, see?
I heard you had to take him to P.F. Chang's with Jay, and he'll just tell you everything.
There you go.
Hey, I've got my mission.
Excellent. All right. So Godspeed. We'll now end this by saying thank you, everyone, for listening to episode 63 of Blightbringers. We'll talk to you again soon.
I'm super excited for episode 69. Six away.
So close.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.